Rabbi Moshe Brisky is the visionary and energetic director of Chabad of the Coneo in Agora Hills, California. With a thriving network of Chabad centers under his leadership, he is a gifted teacher, an orator, and the founder of the Coneo Jewish Academy that educates and inspires thousands of adult students annually. Rabbi Brisky has been a pillar of the National Jewish Retreat since its inception, and we applaud him for his constant, entertaining, inspiring, uplifting, and thought-provoking speaking contributions to the retreat experience. Rabbi Brisky's gifts are not taken for granted. His contributions almost screeched to an untimely halt in September 2022, when crawling in traffic along the 101 freeway one Thursday evening, the rabbi was rear-ended with a force that utterly mangled his vehicle, earning him a medical helicopter evacuation. No one could imagine anyone surviving that. But Rabbi Brisky emerged with relatively minor injuries. The incident was reported as miraculous, but so was his attitude, even as he self-described as bruised and banged up, but very much alive. Rabbi Brisky plotted a swift return to the thick of his selfless activities. Please join us as we pay tribute to Rabbi Brisky and salute him for enhancing and inspiring the National Jewish Retreat for many healthy and happy years to come.
Good evening. It's great to be here. I mean, really great to be here as in existence. And of course, with all of you at the National Jewish Retreat. Thank you, Rabbi Kotlarsky, for everything you do, for all of us shluchim, and for all of us at JLI. Thank you, Rabbi In Rebetzin Mintz. Thank you, Rabbi Epstein. I want to begin on a personal note, unprepared, to say a special thank you to Rabbi Ephraim Mintz. What he has done with JLI is extraordinary, and the hundreds of thousands of lives that he has touched with these programs, and the application of details when it comes to a retreat like this is amazing. You may have noticed everything. There's thought that goes into everything that takes place at this retreat. But I want to share something with all of you. You know, for many of the years I've been here at this retreat, and after the retreat is over, every year, Rabbi Mintz will make copies of all my lectures on DVDs. He'll wrap them up beautifully. He'll write a personal letter, and he will have it brought to my mother's house in Crown Heights and give my mother the gift of being able to watch all of these lectures every year. My mother treasured these DVDs. She watched them again and again and again and again and again. Every caregiver that worked in our house knew every story of mine because they heard them 1,000 times. When I would come to Crown Heights and visit my mother, I was a celebrity in the house by the caregivers thinking, this is the movie star he's visiting. My mother passed away 8 months ago, and I found every single DVD still there. And I also found every single letter that Rabbi Mintz would write to her. And so, as a son, I want to say a big yasher koach, thank you for the tremendous, tremendous kindness that you have shown. Two Jews, Benny and Isaac, they find themselves sitting next to each other in this New York bar. After a while, Benny looks up at Isaac and says, you know, listening to you talk, I can't help but think from the accent that you're from Israel. Isaac says, yeah, I am. What do you know? So am I. I'm from Jerusalem. So am I. Wow. Where did you grow up? 2 miles away from the King David Hotel. You gotta be kidding. So did I. What university did you go to? I went to the Bar Ilan University. Oh my goodness. What year did you graduate? 1984. Amazing, Benny yells out. It's Bashert. Can you believe that I also graduated from Bar-Ilan University in 1984? God engineered that we should both wind up in the same bar tonight. At that point, a frequent customer walks into the bar and sits down. The bartender walks over to him, motions towards Benny and Isaac, and says, "Looks like it's gonna be a long night. The Bellison twins are drunk again." The truth is that as Jews, we need not have that much in common, be it our birthplace or life experiences, to be twins, to be family. It's this incredible phenomenon. Two Jews who are otherwise strangers to one another meet up in an airport or a supermarket, and there's this instant kinship. For better or for worse, whether we like it or not, whether we're involved with Judaism or anything Jewish or not, whether it makes us proud or embarrasses us, there is a deep and intrinsic bond between Jews that is undeniable. What is that all about? Well, to understand this, I think one first has to define what being a Jew is. The Jewish people are perhaps best described as a spiritual family, dating back to our ancestors of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Sarah, and Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah. We are connected by our souls, and every Jew is part of this invisible web by virtue of our Jewishness. You can be born into a Jewish family, or you can join by choice. But once you're in, you are family, no matter what. The Torah is our family rules. It recounts our history, defines our identity, lays out how family members should behave, and the good we are expected to contribute to the world. Now, if you break the rules, you're still a member, because family is family. Those who keep the rules help keep the family together. Those who reject or ignore the rules, mostly out of ignorance, well, it's just a matter of time that someone's going to find you and inspire you and kindle that spark. You see, there are really only two kinds of Jews: those who observe and those that don't observe yet. Every family has its story, its joy, and its conflicts, its high moments and not so high moments. Parents are sometimes proud of their kids or disappointed in them. Children follow their parents or sometimes rebel against them. But throughout the family drama, they remain family. As Jews, we are interconnected spiritually in a way that is no less profound than the way genetic siblings are connected physically. And although the former bond is a transcendent and esoteric one, it constantly manifests itself in the most empirical and tangible way. You know, we find ourselves living in very divisive and polarizing times, both in this country and in Israel. There is hardly a single major issue in current events, be it on the social, political, economic, foreign, or domestic front, that is not laced with some form of controversy, that doesn't risk raising someone's wrath. It's truly a sad state of affairs. But as Jews, we must seek and find ways to rise above it. As brothers and sisters, we have to love each other and not allow politics or other external issues to interfere with the etzem, the essential bond that unites us. There's a short video clip that's been going viral lately on all the apps and platforms, perhaps you've seen it. It shows a young man standing in front of some shopping mall in Israel. He's holding a small Israeli flag. And as people pass, he goes up to each person and he says, very politely in Hebrew, "I have a question. The Judicial Reform Initiative, are you for it or against it?" Now, if the person answers, ani ba'ad, I'm for it, he says, ani neged, I'm against it. But if they said, ani neged, I'm against it, he says, ani ba'ad, I'm for it. He always takes the opposite stance of the person he's talking to. But then in each instance, he follows up with, efshechibuk, can I get a hug? Every single one of those persons on the street, without exception, answers, betach, of course. And they embrace. And he then gives them a small bottle of wine and a bag of chocolate and says, let there be unity amongst our people. One after the other, no matter which side of that explosive issue they're on, the respondents smile, some are moved to tears, and most of them ask for a second hug. Only in Israel, only Am Yisrael. As angry, as vicious, as bitter as it may get, at the end of the day, we must know who and what we are to each other. We are a spiritual family and we are connected by our very souls. Vos mir seinen seinemir, aber jeden seinemir. We are what we are. We feel what we feel. We vote how we vote, but at the end of the day, we are Jews. Beyond our politics, beyond our nationalities, even beyond our religious observance or lack thereof, we are family. This outlook takes on an added significance this year, in that this year is Shnas Hakel, the year of assembly. Hakel was an event that took place once every 7 years in temple times on the holiday of Sukkot, when every Jewish man, woman, and child would assemble in the temple courtyard and see and hear the King of Israel read from the Torah. Awesome in spirit and spectacle, it established the entire year to follow as one dedicated to the theme of Jewish unity and solidarity. The Lubavitcher Rebbe would often emphasize the importance of keying into the spiritual energy of Hakel prevalent in a Hakel year such as this, even in post-temple times, by holding as many gatherings of Jews as possible, in which words of Torah are studied and mitzvot positive deeds are performed. In that sense, this entire retreat is the ultimate Hakel experience, as it brings together Jews from all walks of life in a common quest for Jewish knowledge, for inspiration, and for action. Some 2 years ago, there was a woman whose husband, the young man, had to have a heart transplant. They were going to have this operation done at Columbia University Hospital in New York. The wife was understandably very upset, very nervous, very tense, a young family with little kids at home. So she put out there on various prayer lists and apps, asking people to pray for her husband that the operation should go well. 1,300 miles away, Miami, Florida, there's a young woman. She's 28 years old. She gets the text message, the app. There's someone that's asking for a prayer for a heart transplant. Not long before, she herself had undergone a heart transplant. Apparently, she had had a difficult pregnancy that somehow triggered heart issues. Her condition went from bad to worse, and the only way to save her life was through a heart transplant, which happened successfully. And so she hears and she reads about this man and his wife at Columbia University Hospital. She gets on a plane. She flies from Miami to New York, mind you. She doesn't know these people from Adam. She comes into the hospital and has them call up to the room. The nurse tells the wife, there's someone downstairs who wants to see you. The wife comes down and the young woman says to her, I want you to know that I had a heart transplant recently, and I'm fine. But I know exactly what your husband is going through right now, and I know what you're going through right now, so I came here so that you have a shoulder to cry on. She was there for 24 hours. She gave strength to the family, she got back on a plane, and she went back to Miami. But here's the rest of the story. The woman from Florida went into the hospital for her transplant in early April of 2020. It was at the height of the COVID pandemic. They didn't find a donor until late May. But in her condition, they couldn't let her out of the hospital. So she was in the hospital all alone. Remember, no visitations, no family, no husband, no friends, no one. It's COVID time. There were people all around her dying from COVID. May 23rd, 2020, a donor was finally located, and she had the long-awaited operation, and she was able to go home. But she was then stricken with a terrible case of PTSD. She was so traumatized by the ordeal in the hospital that she developed a phobia. She was afraid to leave her house, let alone the Miami area. She was terrified of being more than a few minutes away from her doctors, that she could not go anywhere out of the house for an entire year. Her husband said to her, "Let's go on a vacation. We need it." "No, I can't." She underwent therapy to try to conquer her trauma. They put her on medication. Nothing helped. And then she gets this text. And she hears about someone she does not know, has never met, about to go through what she had been through, and that they're terrified as to what's going to happen. She leaves her home for the first time in a year, gets on a plane, flies to New York to spend 24 hours with them. Now, she didn't tell the woman, "You know, this is the first time I've been anywhere in a year. I've been out of it." All she said was, "I'm here for you. I'm a shoulder you can lean on, cry on if need be. I have a heart you can connect to in more ways than one. I'm gonna soften the blow and lighten the load of what your folks are going through." My friends, that's just not an act of kindness to a stranger. That's family. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh, all Jews are responsible for one another, physically and spiritually. It dates back to a memory engraved upon our souls as we stood together at the foot of Mount Sinai and we pledged ourselves to a collective existence as a people under the sovereignty of God. Look, when something happens in Israel, we all feel the jolt. Whether it's war on the battlefronts, acts of terror on the streets, or rockets raining down on population centers, we feel it in our guts. Some of us may have family members living in Israel. Others perhaps don't know anyone there, and yet we all feel their plight in a very deep and personal way. That's because being Jewish is not something individual and private. It's something collective and historical. Being Jewish means being part of this family. When Russia's invasion of Ukraine resulted in hundreds of thousands of Jews being displaced and running for their lives, Jewish communities around the world stepped up to support the rescue efforts. Whether through Chabad's network of 250 shluchim in Ukraine or other organizations, safe passage was arranged for Jews to escape to neighboring countries where their needs continue to be looked after. Even now, the support continues to pour in for those Jews who are still living in the thick of a war zone. So from the macro to the micro, we each have each other's backs. We stand up for one another. We help one another. We sacrifice for one another. Nobody's asking who these Jews are. No one's asking what's their politics. How Zionistic are they? How religious are they? What standard of kashrut do they keep? Because we know that a Jew is a Jew is a Jew. That Judaism is not a religion as much as it is family. You're not a member of the family on account of your behavior, but on account of your essence. And the essence for the Jew is their neshama, it's their soul. It's the spark of God within that can be concealed beneath layers upon layers of ignorance and unawareness for years, even generations, only to come roaring back in a blazing flame with just the slightest ignition in the right place and the right time. in my neck of the woods in a little town called Moore Park, California, we have a Gan Israel summer day camp, which is directed by a shlucha named Dvorah Heidingsfeld. Although most of the staff Dvorah recruits for the program are older teenagers who attend Jewish high schools or seminaries on the East Coast, and thus they can impart Jewish spirit and knowledge to the campers, she also hires some local talent for some of the more junior positions in the camp. As those counselors tend to focus more on the social and recreational aspects of the program, they don't need to be that well-versed in Judaism. Before last summer, Mrs. Heidingsfeld placed an ad in the summer job section of a local website indicating that she was looking for some junior counselors for a Jewish day camp. Among the responses that came back was an inquiry from a Hispanic teenager. Her name was Emily Aguiar, asking if a candidate had to be Jewish to interview for the position. She told her that this particular position was primarily social and recreational in nature, and therefore wouldn't be a problem. And so she came for the interview. Upon meeting Emily, Dvorah was immediately taken by the girl's bright and cheerful demeanor and her desire to work with kids, and she hired her on the spot. And once camp got on the way, Emily proved to be an amazing counselor, enthusiastic about every aspect of the program. Both her campers and fellow counselors fell in love with her, as she fell in love with the camp. So when the 4 weeks that she had signed up for came to an end, she asked Dvorah if she can stay for the second session to continue working in this camp. She was having such a great time. During this time, she developed this very close relationship with the director, with Dvorah and her husband and her family. In fact, after the camp was over, the Heidingsfeld had her become their babysitter for their own children. And one day, Emily shows up to babysit the Heidingsfeld kids. She comes running into the house. She's jumping up and down with excitement. She cries out, "Dvorah, you're not gonna believe this. I just found out I'm Jewish." She bursts into tears. "Dvorah, I'm Jewish, I'm Jewish." Emily Aguiar. "How can that be?" Dvorah says. She says, "All throughout the summer, I felt this deep connection to all the Jewish aspects going on in the camp program. I became close friends with the counselors from New York. They were my sisters. They were like my soul sisters. I felt a connection. And I would especially be tuned in during what you call davening. I loved davening. I loved praying. I loved benching. I loved that you said a prayer after meals. I loved all this stuff. I loved saying the Shema. I would feel something in my heart when I said it. Now, oftentimes during camp, I would come home singing the camp songs, some of them in Hebrew, some of them in English. Now, my parents certainly don't understand Hebrew. They don't even understand English that well. But they were so happy to see me engaged, happy, fulfilling my passion. The other day, I started singing a camp song at home. And it was a particular camp song about the matriarchs. I was singing a song about Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And my mother says, "Rivka, I know that name, Rivka. That's your birth mother's name." I had always known that I was adopted when I was 2 months old, but I knew nothing about my biological parents, and I never asked. But now, upon hearing the song, my mom tells me that my biological parents were a young Israeli couple named Noach and Rivka. They were very young and felt ill-prepared to raise a child, so they gave me up for adoption before moving back to Israel. My parents then showed me some of the documentation of the adoption. It showed that my birth parents gave me a name, Oriah. The girl couldn't be more thrilled to discover that she is, in fact, a daughter of Israel. And she suddenly understood why her entire being seemed to peak up whenever something related to Yiddishkeit happened in the camp. Emily, or Oriah as she now goes, has been learning Hebrew. She learns from the Torah. She continues to frequent the Chabad of Moore Park with all the full blessings of her adoptive parents. The soul of a Jew is equipped with a homing device that sends and receives signals from our heritage and from our fellow Jews. Where I live in the Canale Valley, we have many unaffiliated Jews. Many do come around and get involved, but we still have a lot of work cut out for us. That said, almost every time I find myself in a public place, whether it's a supermarket, a drugstore, a gas station, inadvertently some Jew will spot my kippah, my yarmulke, and feel the need to connect. They'll try to say something to make sure I know. They'll say shalom or Shabbat shalom, or they'll throw in some Yiddish word. It's almost like this secret code to acknowledge our not-so-secret bond. You see, my dear friends, our brothers and our sisters, they don't want to hide anymore. Their internal devices are constantly going off, whether consciously or subconsciously, wittingly or unwittingly. They want in. And when that happens, we, every one of us in this room, we must let them know that they are family. That no matter where a Jew may roam, he or she can always come back home. I conclude with this very short story. One of the Chabad Shluchim in Anchorage, Alaska, is a rabbi by the name of Rabbi Levi Glitenstein. One day, Rabbi Glitenstein receives a call from a man who introduced himself as Jules Klavan. For decades, Mr. Klavan, who was Jewish, had been living in close proximity to bears and moose and caribou and sheep in some small town in Alaska called Sundonta, a population of 4,000, nowhere near a Jewish community. He's now 80 years old, and he's terminally ill. Jules Klavan was calling the number he had found on the Chabad.org website with a single request. I have 3 weeks left. I don't have any family here. Although I haven't been involved in a Jewish community in decades, I want to be buried as a Jew. I want to be buried with my people. Can you help me? Of course, Rabbi Glitenstein said. For the next 3 weeks, Jules Klavan called the rabbi every day. In the course of their conversations, he shared his Hebrew name, Yosef ben Eliezer HaKohen. He shared memories of his Jewish life growing up in New England, where he accompanied his grandfather to synagogue services. For a long time, he had divided his life between living in Miami and in Alaska, but in recent years, he made Alaska his home. Rabbi, when the time comes, you'll make sure to come and take me. The rabbi assured him that indeed he would. And with each subsequent phone call, Jules Klavan's voice got quieter and weaker. The question was always the same. As the end was approaching, they had a video call together during which the rabbi led his friend in the recital of the Shema and the Vidui confessional prayers. Although Jules had not lived among Jews or attended services for so long, he recited the Shema fluently by heart in Hebrew. On July 20th, 2022, Jules Klavan passed away. As per his final wishes, his remains were brought to Anchorage, where members of the Seattle Hever Kadisha were waiting. They had flown in specially to perform the Tara, the purification of his body. As the funeral was approaching, Rabbi Glitenstein posted a notice on Facebook, hoping to have at least 10 Jews on hand at the Jewish section of Anchorage Memorial Park Cemetery, so that Kaddish could be recited with a minyan at Jules' funeral. When the rabbi arrived at the cemetery, he was surprised to find hundreds of Jews who had come to see Yosef ben Eliezer HaKohen off on his final journey as a holy Jew. Among the group were Chabad rabbis, local community members, tourists, students of a traveling camp, and total strangers who saw the post. Not one person in the crowd had ever met the deceased, but that didn't matter. He was a fellow Jew. He was family. Dear friends, as we enter the final weeks of this Hakel year, let us all be more cognizant of who and what we are to each other. From birth until the very end of our journey, we are a people, we are a nation, we are communities, but above all, we are family. Thank you very much.
Please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.